Welcome to Finding Your Epic. This is a show where senior level women share their epic moments, telling the story behind those light bulb experiences where they learned a powerful skill that shaped their career progression. Hosted by me, Jacqueline Frost, founder of Elevate Talent. And today we are talking with Heather Key. Heather is Chief Legal Counsel at Serco and Chair of the Army Families Federation. Heather and I met 12 years ago when she had just been made Head of Legal at her previous employer. At the time, Heather told me she had gained great experience in her career to date and fulfilled so many of her goals, and now she wanted to plan her next set of goals for the next 2 to 3 years and the ways to get there. Not just for her career, but also to gain non-exec experience, give back by volunteering for charity, and also to achieve that sacred family time too. I remember being so impressed, and it's certainly no surprise to see how much of this she has achieved. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited to be able to tell a little bit about my story and where we've come from over the last 12 years. For me, it's been a real journey. I've learnt so much, not only about me, but also about how I impact other people and how important it is to bring people together to be able to further what I want to do, but also what my work life, my church life and my family life is bringing to life for everybody.
And that's a great thing because, of course, that's all encapsulated in the title that we've chosen for your podcast. And I love that, the word community. It's so widespread, isn't it? It's everything around you. It's a community you build in the various different places. And, you know, that's the word that you mentioned so much when we were catching up recently about your career and the skills that had helped you over the years. So with that word community, what does community mean to you?
For me, it's bringing together lots of different people. One of my super skills is being able to connect people. And I found that that is something that I'm really able to bring to life. It's a skill I didn't know I had. But whether I'm in my work life and I'll have a telephone call, what can we do about this? Well, let's bring in this person or let's bring in this person. Let's work together to get that solution going. Whether it's in my friendships, something's happened. So again, reaching out to various people to bring them together, to bring a solution, or actually just to sit and listen to what's going on. And I've also found that within my church life as well, that, you know, being able to reach out to different people, being able to share your story, but listen to their stories and knowing that you can connect, not only whether it's in a work life and a friendship life or in a church community life, but being able to connect as a human being, but also being able to connect with your professional hat on has been absolutely brilliant. One of the things that I've been able to do, and one of the areas where I started to do this, was in my previous company, where we connected through DE&I and we set up a women's group. That was just a really extraordinary experience of different like-minded people coming together to achieve something and being able to really set out and make a difference and make some impact within the business. And that wasn't without its challenges. There were people who didn't know what we were doing and why we were doing it. But what's really important is being able to tell your authentic story and then for people to be able to listen, people to be able to be curious about what you're doing, people to be able to challenge what you're doing, but for them to start to understand why it is so important. And I saw that within my previous company, and I was able to bring those skills into Serco. So when we were looking to set up our DE&I groups and our inclusion hubs, one of the inclusion hub areas was our LGBT area that we hadn't got set up yet. So I was able to bring those skills in. I'm an ally for that community. I was able to ask questions. You learn every day from communities as well. You get to know people, you get to ask questions. And it's been such a privilege to bring that community to life as part of our inclusion hub within Serco. And we've got lots of other communities within in the inclusion hub, which is fantastic to see.
It's so interesting hearing you talking about the experience as well, having done setting up a group one place and then obviously using that experience to now set up a different group, a group that you were setting up as an ally rather than as a as an individual who subscribed to that community, and want of a better way of putting it, but you know, subscribe feels like the most inclusive word that we can use here. And what often people think about that when they think about those groups and events, the word, the buzzword that's been used an awful lot over the years is networking. I don't think I really heard the word networking until about 10 years ago. Certainly in my time in banking, we never referred to it as networking. And I think it's a word that seems to be met with some sort of reluctance or skepticism by many people. So you don't have, you never use, what I love about when we talk is you don't use that word, or if you do, you don't use it very often. So how, when setting up these groups, how did you reframe this so it had a more positive perspective?
I think you're right. I think very often in a professional element, networking is a term that's really conjured up with business events, forced small talk, and really transactional, rather than it being curious about the people you're meeting. And I think by reframing it, and certainly networking prior to COVID maybe felt like that. Now that we are networking online, but also when I've gone to networking events, which have been more after COVID and in person, I've actually found them really joyous. People really do want to connect on a different level now because they know what it's like to have that hiatus. So for me, networking is about making sure you stay curious, whether that's at an event or whether it's in the communities that you're building. It's about finding like-minded colleagues, but also finding people who challenge you and not being scared of that. Because I think sometimes we like to find people who agree with us, and that means we're sitting in our comfort zone. For me, part of my journey has been learning to embrace people who push me outside of my comfort zone and being curious about people who have experienced different elements and who bring a different kind of conversation to my why and really challenge me. I think if you can go to networking events or network with people with that curiosity and openness, it's a real platform for learning. It's a real platform for being inspired. It's a real platform for innovation and you know, changing your mindset as well. And that's both why I've reframed it in such a positive way, because for me, it's about how do I learn? And I'm always wanting to find out more. How do I advance what I'm doing? But also, how can I mentor other people to be able to challenge them and help them to advance as well?
Yeah, it makes me think of the bit of advice that I will share with people when they say about going to events and, you know, how do they connect? And I always say, be interested, not interesting. I think there's an automatic reflex in a lot of people to try and be interesting and share humorous stories or something that you think that will be kind of almost like a crowd pleaser. And actually, you're absolutely right. Be curious, be interested, and ask people about themselves. And you completely made me remember as well, I was at an amazing event at International Women's Day held at King's College with Julia Gillard, the former Prime Minister of Australia, and Christiane Amanpour, who's obviously the most amazing anchor at CNN. And I talked to a lady actually getting the drinks, and I said to her, "Oh, what, you know, which wine did you go for, the white or the red?" And she shared the white, and I said, "Okay, I'll go with that as well." And she started telling me about her background, and her background is in data. And so I was like, "Oh my goodness, we're just putting our data together from our first EPIC report, which is on the first year of the before and after of our new self-assessment quiz that we ask attendees to." Fill in to see, you know, the results that we get, the before and after. And I started sharing it with her. And of course, she came up with all this amazing information. So I've actually got a call in the diary with her next week to say, excellent, look through. And I was giving some of the numbers. I said, oh, you know, we've only got 75% of attendees filled in the before and after. She went, oh, that's huge. I was like, really? I was thinking it was bad. I was like, oh no, we only got 75%. She went, no, that's amazing. So it was amazing somebody to meet, you know, just because I asked her, which wine do you think looks better? Which wine did you go for? And just a very simple question like that. And we talked about 10 minutes. And then I saw somebody I knew and I introduced them. And it's a lovely thing to be able to do, but it's going with that. Be curious, ask people about themselves. And I have just made an incredibly good contact through it, who I'm hoping to learn a lot from her when I talk with her next week. So it does make me smile when you say things, because you're right, when you do it, it's incredibly powerful and it feels great. Sometimes you go and you start a conversation, it just doesn't go anywhere. So what do you do? I mean, when things are going well, we all feel good about ourselves, don't we? But when things don't go so well, so what about when you go to one of these events and you are being interested and the person is not responding? Or I've also seen people say, why are you asking me so many questions? Then you feel like, oh, I'm not meaning to be mean or rude or you know, too sort of, you know, involved in your life. So tell me a little about the experiences when it hasn't gone so well. What do you do? How do you get it back on track? What's your response?
Everybody has got a story. Everybody has got something that they're interested in. And sometimes you can hit upon that as soon as you meet somebody. I mean, you're all at the same event or you're all connecting through an interesting matter. And it's asking them about why they're there. And you know, again, sometimes being really honest, you might just have to move on and say, it's lovely to meet you, and move on to somebody else. But very often, finding out why people are there gives you that little bit of an insight into what they're thinking. I think that access to somebody who you may not have met if you're just in your own profession, your own working life. The networking events do bring in lots of different people. And I think that is the joy. And being able to find a bit of energy sometimes, again, at these events, they can be a little bit energy draining. So being able to find that little something that people can pick up on. And look, if it's only a few words and you need to move on, let them know who you are. And very often you might circle back in a room and you might find them again and be able to pick up, who have you spoken to? How can we continue that conversation? It's a very interesting way of thinking about networking. It's you never know when you might meet that person again. So it's like in life, isn't it? You have to be really careful and clear and always treat people with kindness, because you never know when it's going to come back to you. It's a very small network that we actually work in, and everybody knows somebody. So if you can leave somebody with a smile on their face and a bit of positivity, you never know when your name might be mentioned next.
Again, I love that point. In the words I always tell people is, don't burn your bridge, never burn your bridge, because you never know when you might need that bridge to go back over it, or you might want somebody else to come over it, you know, with you. And so never, ever burn the bridge. And it's interesting. So do you have any tips there on how to politely extract yourself? You know, do you say something like, oh, I've just noticed a friend of mine over there. Nice to meet you. How do you, because you say nice to meet you. Is that enough to just say, well, do we overthink this? Do we overthink this when we try to do this?
I think we do. I absolutely think we do, because we're trying to be nice. And I think that what we need to be doing is, as you've just mentioned, you can always say, would you like to come over and I can introduce you to a friend I've just seen on the other side of the room? Or you can beckon other people into the conversation with you and make sure that you are inviting other people in and make an introduction. It's making sure that you do that in a way that is empathetic, and it's in a way that you're still saying curious, but also you're being polite. As you say, don't burn those bridges. But equally, very often you can make an excuse if you simply need to go and use the restroom. That's always a good one.
Yes, that is it. Oh, just I'd actually, the one I tend to use, and it is a genuine one, because often you go to an event, and I've been on the train and then the underground, and you get in there and somebody kind of offers you some sort of drink straight away. The one thing I always want to do is wash my hands. This was even pre-COVID. I always want to wash my hands because I just think I've got I've got London on my hands. So that's the one I was going to say, excuse me, I have just come in here. I really want to wash my hands, and off I go, because I know I am going to go and do it.
I'll use that one in the future, but if you do that with me, I'll know.
So I'm like, sorry, Heather, I've got to go wash my hands. And the thing is, with all this, we're talking about this very much from a community building perspective, but things are rarely one dimensional. So what unexpected insights or discoveries did you make along the way?
I think with any community group or any networking event or experience that you can have, you learn so much about other people, but you're also learning about yourself and how you respond. So for me, diverse perspectives is always something I'm really interested in. I've talked about DE&I previously. That is something that's really important to me, and it's really important to have those perspectives that do challenge you, that do take you outside of your comfort zone, or that you've never thought about before. What I love is also I collect phrases from other people who have been absolutely brilliant and turned things around. One of my trustees most recently, when we were having a challenging conversation, suddenly used a phrase, I love that perspective. I love a robust conversation. Let's unpack that. I thought that was fabulous. And for me, that's a new phrase that I've now got in my head that I can use when I'm starting to feel a little bit under pressure, maybe being a bit challenged, but actually saying, I want to understand where you're coming from. So that's a really great one to use in a very non-confrontational way, but actually allows you to be challenged and allow that to be accepted. So for me, it's a learning opportunity as well, and a growth opportunity. So what have I learnt today that I wouldn't have known if I hadn't have gone to that event? That's that curiosity again, making sure that you stay curious, that you're always learning. And the other thing that I discovered is that innovation, that spark of I've gone and done this and I've been thinking about doing this down a particular path, and yet somebody will mention something to you and you recalibrate what you're going to do and how you're going to do it because of, like I say, a little spark or a little conversation about a new way of working that somebody else has maybe been successful at or is trying. And I think that is really important. One of the things that I've been exploring at the moment within the legal profession is the legal ops, is the AI, is what's going to be coming in, what's that next generation going to look like, what's that next generation of lawyer going to look like. And so it's a real opportunity for what's that going to look like for the future? What's that innovation going to be? And the connections that I'm making through different networks now around things like the O-shaped lawyer, about a different type of lawyer moving forward, has been absolutely brilliant. And for me, that's the unexpected insight. It's meeting people who are like-minded but are doing things in a very different way than I would have done them, and certainly future lawyers are going to be able to do them. So it's not one-dimensional. It's what you take from it, but also what you can give back to it. And certainly within the O-shaped, it's that giving back that I'm hoping that I'd be able to do moving forward to bring in a different generation of lawyer, a different way of thinking, especially now that we're really using AI and how we're going to use that moving forward. So I think there's a real opportunity to do things differently.
So just for those who may not have heard the term before, can you just explain what an O-shaped lawyer is?
Absolutely. Lawyers in our profession are very technical. We tend to understand the law and are able to talk to other lawyers about the law and get very excited about it. An O-shaped lawyer is somebody who can understand the law and interpret it, but is also somebody who is really open to both challenge but also curiosity. They're really thinking about opportunities. They're original thinkers. They are bringing in themselves and being authentic to who they are and thinking about how we communicate with our in-house community, but also our private practice community, in a way that is very open and understanding of both practices. Working in private practice has its own pressures, and working in-house has its own pressures. And on bridging that gap and understanding how we can work together, and it's not just about the hourly rate, it's not just about the output, it's about how we build those communities together, is so important. So we're sort of talking about how do we look at how we engage private practice from our in-house perspective. How do we have much more of an honest conversation about fees and billing, about when I expect lawyers to be on call, which is not 24/7, which is literally between the business hours, and making sure we're bringing through, again, junior lawyers into conversations, and allowing them to experience going to meetings with, and bringing them through to really give them opportunities moving forward. It's a different mindset, and I think that's what the O-shaped is. It's a different mindset, a different way of working. And I'm really excited about the community that the O-shaped is building. It's building momentum. It's building conversation about what we expect our lawyers of the future to be like, both in-house and in private practice. And I think from a mental health point of view, as well as a professional point of view, as well as embracing technology, we're going to have to start thinking a lot more O-shaped. I think Dan Kane has done an absolutely fantastic job of bringing that to life. And he talks about him going into surgery with his son, and the doctor coming out of that surgery, having performed surgery, and saying to him, you know, the operation went well, but it was the humility and it was the personality that the doctor brought to that conversation after the technical operation had happened that he wanted to bring out in lawyers, and wants to make sure that lawyers can talk like that as well. And I think that for me is the story that Dan tells is absolutely fantastic, and I have not done it justice, but it's bringing that empathy into, and that humility and humanity into being a lawyer, which is going to take us forward.
Well, it's a really good point on doctors, because, of course, I would refer to that as being bedside manner. It might be a bit of an old-fashioned way of looking at it. And what's also interesting is that, as well, when you look in the US, which obviously with medical world can be very litigious, the doctors, there'll be people that will want to sue Dr. A, and they've maybe seen Dr. A, B, and C in the whole time of their care, their medical care. And they'll want to sue Dr. A because they'll say, no, the problem that happened was because of Dr. A. And it was definitely not Dr. A. It might have been B. It could more likely to be C. But because B and C both had much better bedside manner, the individual's like, no, it can't be him or her. They were so nice. They were so friendly. They were so kind. They were so empathetic. And so it's a really important action to take, actually. Is it goes back to your point of even when you're networking at an event, be kind to people, because it's that kindness, it's that empathy, it's that compassion that has a huge impact on what people think of you. And you could be technically better than the person next to you, and you could be the doctor that didn't actually cause the problem, and yet people will go to the person that they, it's almost a likability factor, isn't it, that they like the least. And it always makes me think that's one of the factors that goes back to Cialdini's six Indeed. Principles of influence, which we use a lot in our sessions. And I read 30 years ago, I read 20 years ago, I read 10 years ago. I keep on reading it because it's so key to those basic human behaviors and emotions that we all experience, and how we want others to behave towards us. So therefore, start by doing it first.
I completely agree. The one thing that I have learned, though, is likability is really important, and you're absolutely right, but not everybody likes you. And I think growing up, that's also really important to understand. And it's finding, as you've just mentioned, it's finding the people that you connect with. And I think that is really important.
Yeah, because also the issue, actually, if everybody does like you, then actually is that a red flag that you actually are a people pleaser? And people say that, and you know, people do want to make other people happy, but what's the cost? So it's the cost of your own, you know, authenticity is obviously a big word that's used in the career development world, you know, but are you being true to yourself? You know, really, is it what you want? Is it what you want to achieve? And so that's it's always a balance, isn't it? It's finding that balance right. But no, absolutely, build the community around you, and there will always be people that you're not going to bond with, and that's fine. That's fine. You know, that's not an issue. Now, we always finish the session with a final thought, and I know I love the quote that you have brought for today, Heather, if you'd like to share it.
Absolutely. Because we've been talking about community, I've chosen a quote by Helen Keller, who is the author and activist for disabilities, being both deaf and blind herself. And she said, "Alone we can do so little, together we can do so much." And I just felt that was a real, encapsulated the conversation about networking and community, and really made me think about what I can do individually, but what I've done in my communities has been so much more because I've been able to make those connections.
Excellent. Thank you, Heather. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast and the topic of epic community. Now go find your epic.
Thank you for listening today. If you would like to learn more about any of the tools and strategies discussed, please do reach out to us on LinkedIn or contact us via the website on team@elevatetalent.co.uk. Now go find your epic.